Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torda. Every year, outdoor gear and clothing manufacturers bring out new items for backcountry enthusiasts. As Alaskans gear up for winter, this Outdoor Explorer discusses what's new in winter gear and clothing with Rick Roth of Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking and Tony Lombardo with Summit Ski Company. They share tips for preparing and taking care of your winter gear and clothing. We'll talk about a wide assortment of gear from backcountry and Nordic skis to snowshoes and jackets. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer. Host Paul Tordat. Today we have Rick Roth with Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking and Tony Lombardo with Summit Ski Company. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, Paul. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to be back.
Yeah, this is a great show. We're going to be talking about winter gear and clothing. There's a lot of new stuff out there, and hopefully the termination dust is on the mountains and it's looking like winter. So let's start with you and your business. Rick, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about yourself and AMH.
Yeah, I'm the general manager at AMH. I started working there in 2012, so I've been there for just a little bit. I moved up to Alaska in 2009 to go to school up in Fairbanks, and I've stuck around ever since, and it feels like I've definitely found my place in the world and look forward to every winter that comes around.
And tell us about the story of AMH. It's been around, seems like, forever, and what's its niche, and what do you guys offer?
Yeah, so yeah, we've been around in 1974, founded by Paul Dankwalter, who sold the business to Jason Buttrick in 2018 when he decided to retire. And it's still very much in the family, locally owned store that specializes in really everything Alaska adventure, somewhere in winter. We do cross-country skiing, backcountry, alpine skiing, wild ice skating, ice climbing, mountaineering. We have everything for everything you want to do outside in Alaska, pretty much.
Awesome. And Tony, yourself and Summit Ski?
I got my start way back in the 90s at REI in the back shop there, and went on to manage a bike shop here for a few years locally, and more recently was in the back shop at Ski AK for about 15 years. And when they closed, I had opportunity to kind of keep things going and purchase the service equipment, and very happy to be able to provide service for the community, ski related, anything that slides on snow, any winter work at all.
Yeah, so basically I think of you guys as backcountry skis, alpine skis, and snowboards.
Yeah, and we do a lot of race tuning for the race programs here locally.
Yeah.
That's, well, and additionally, one of our specialties.
Yeah, and so a little bit of a lot of service, right?
Yeah.
And but you do have some retail stuff.
We do have some retail, yeah.
Right, yeah. That's great. And I know AMH is on Spinard, been there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you are where?
We're in Midtown. We're right off the intersection of 36th and Old Seward.
What a great contribution both your businesses provide for this very winter-oriented community. So thank you for providing that and being here today with us. Let's talk about nuclear, and I want to start, I'm a skier, so I immediately go to skier, but boy, there's a lot to talk about. There's skis, there's snowshoes, there's ice skates, there's ice climbing, there's walking, there's running, there's biking. We don't really have a biker here, right? Or we don't have a bike shop with us here today. But there's just so much to do compared to when I first started in this outdoor adventure type activities. So Rick, let's start with you. What is new? Talk to us about some of the new stuff you guys got or what you're excited about.
Yeah, I would say there's like a few kind of key products that are pretty new and interesting. I'd say kind of category-wise, like you mentioned, it seems like every couple of years there's this whole new winter activity that comes around, and it's the backcountry ice skating or Nordic ice skating or wild ice skating, as it's kind of becoming called.
Yeah.
And we've just seen like a huge explosion of that in probably the last 3 or 4 years. It's something that, as a business, AMH has been doing for a long time in like a small little bit, kind of bringing stuff over from like Europe and the Scandinavian countries. But there's a local, like fully made in Alaska brand, Ehrman Skates, that started up, I think, 3 years or so ago now, that's like really become very popular. They have like a really high quality, incredible product that's also available in a large variety of like fun and interesting colors. And I think that's also helped drive a lot of interest here. Yeah. And for people who aren't knowledgeable about it, it's using like longer than ice skate or hockey skate, like kind of flatter profile blades that are more stable on skating on unprepared or ungroomed ice, like frozen lakes, rivers, things like that, that you generally pair with a like cross-country skate ski or like a backcountry Nordic boot.
And what is I think about speed, like is it like a speed skate?
It would be like the most analogous. They are like a free heel skate. You put a cross-country ski binding, so they have like a rubber flexor, a bumper in the front that helps the skate return up to the foot when you pick it up off the ice. But yeah, that'd be kind of the most analogous thing would be like a clap style speed skate.
And I think we're going to have a show in the works about sort of wilderness wild ice skating. But what other kind of safety gear would I need to think about? Because I think about going in the water. Doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely not. The goal is definitely not to. There's a big safety culture. Like Luke Mell has been a big proponent and like innovator in that space up here. And I know he offers like courses now and instructional material. But the couple kind of big things are like ice spikes or claws, kind of like worn around the neck, like big spikes with like easily grippable handles that if you fall through the ice, you can use that to help pull yourself out. The other couple big things are making sure to have like clothing in a dry bag so that if you go in, you've got something dry to change into. Some people will carry like some sort of device for checking the depth of the ice, either like a probe pole or an ice screw to drill down to see how thick the ice is, as well as if you're getting a little more into it, kind of going on the bigger, deeper lakes, things like that, like throw rescue lines and like anchoring equipment and things. But I'd say the biggest thing for most folk are the around the neck like ice probe poles and having a set of dry clothing that's in a dry bag.
Yeah. We'll come back to skis, but Tony, what's new in your world? Clear.
Well, I think some of the cooler things is just watching the evolution of backcountry equipment over the years. And we've kind of come to a place where we've got extremely light yet very durable bindings. We have boots that are lightweight and they tour well and they ski excellently. It's been pretty exciting watching this stuff kind of get dialed in over the years. One of the things that I'm pretty excited about myself is Scarpa's now offering a new Telemark boot for the first time in like 15 years. So we've modernized that technology, and there's some pretty exciting options for folks that are trying free heel activity and different ways to do it. And we do a little bit of experimentation with different setups, and it's cool to watch people get things dialed in.
So Tony, give us a little family history of Nordic like skis and bindings, because it's complicated nowadays.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'd say, I mean, we started back in the 70s with the 3-pin binding, which became a standard at that time. And in that era, folks were basically using leather boots that were slightly beefier than cross-country boots. We had really skinny wooden skis. They were extremely long. And so if you can imagine, it was a challenging endeavor, and it was one that had a pretty steep learning curve.
That was me. Yep.
Things have definitely gotten easier.
Yeah.
So then, you know, towards the latter part of the 80s and early 90s, we started to see plastic boots, and that was a huge revolution. And along that same time frame, we saw skis that became wider and shorter and had more shape to them. So all of that basically equals easier use, easier, more approachable sport. And more recently, we've seen a new Telemark standard called the new Telemark Norm, which is a different interface with how the boot latches to the ski. And that allows for even more control and more possibility. And now we have bindings that will tour with just pins at the toe, allowing for a free stride. And then you can actually latch the boot in for the downhill portion. So we have efficient travel and excellent downhill fun.
Yeah. And are they releasable then? Do they release?
Not technically.
Okay. not intentionally.
Not ideally.
Okay. Yeah. So for those listeners aren't familiar, so we're talking about like climbing up a hill with skins on and skiing down.
Yes.
Or maybe resort skiing also.
Yeah, a good bit of that.
Yeah. And what about skins and other gear associated with that? Do one of you have any, is there anything new in that realm? And these are mohair skins that people that start about glue on, for people aren't familiar with it. So you glue on the bottom of your skis and you can go up a steeper hill than you would with, let's say, kick wax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say skins like have kind of been pretty settled as far as general construction goes, but the brand Pamoka is doing something pretty interesting. They're going to release this season, hopefully in like maybe the next month or so, we should get them in the store. They're doing like a mixed construction skin. So in broad strokes, most climbing skins are either made with nylon as the gripping fiber or mohair or some sort of mix of the two. And historically, it's been the same fiber all through the whole skin, all nylon, all mohair, all a mix edge to edge. But Pamoka is coming out with their Expedition skin, which is really grippy, really durable nylon on the edges with a mixed mohair strip down the middle. So when you're kind of going up something that's a little steep, off camber, kind of icy, you're pressuring the edges, you get better grip and traction.
Oh, interesting.
But when you're traveling kind of flat or rolling terrain, you get the better gliding characteristics of the mohair down the middle of the skin. So you're kind of getting a bit of the best of both worlds and also like a light packable setup too, which is nice.
That's one thing I've seen. The skins have become extremely light and they will roll down to a very small, you put them in your pocket.
Oh, nice.
Definitely a big advancement over the last few years. Companies like Pamoka, helps to the efficiency of the whole operation.
Sounds like I should upgrade my skins. I'm pretty old. All my stuff's pretty old. What about, I've also seen these skis that have, they're waxless. They have fishtails on the bottom. So let's go down for that sort of more touring aspect. I'll look at you, Rick, a little bit for this one. What's going on with that, those sort of fishtail ski?
Yeah.
I just want to go up and tour in the front range of the park. I'm not looking at doing turns or anything like that. I just want to do a tour. What's going on with that area?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing we're seeing there, especially in the like backcountry oriented, like front range, Hatcher Pass, kind of like true backcountry Nordic touring, is we're seeing some of the like build and shaping of like backcountry alpine, like alpine touring skis transition into those. So using lighter weight kind of core constructions and that to lighten up the whole setup, you're getting a little more shape splay, some rocker in the nose and a little bit of softness in them, which helps the like downhill capability, not like alpine skiing downhill, but if you've ever kind of tried to go down on a Nordic backcountry setup, it can be a little exciting. Yeah. So getting that like alpine nose to them really helps make that more fun, enjoyable, a little easier if conditions are a little funky out there. Yeah. So like Solomon has done a big redesign, as well as Rossignol have brought a lot of those characteristics into their backcountry middle edge skis, which is pretty cool.
Tony, what about, for both of you, it's a fishtail, It seems like I have friends that go zipping up a hill and I'm like struggling with my fishtails. Are there differences in those?
Yeah, there's different brands. They each have their own approach. Yeah. So everybody kind of has what they think is going to work the best. Some fish scales are going to be extending below the level of the base. with the idea that you're getting a little more traction. They all inherently work really well in certain conditions, and then there are some conditions where they're either going to slide and not have a lot of grip, or the opposite in some conditions where you're going to feel a lot of drag from that fish scale. So it's a little bit of a compromise, but it does give you a versatility to not have a climbing skin and still be able to travel up an incline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And different brands kind of have like different mindsets behind how they're building the skis too. Like Fisher as a brand tends to run still relatively like high camber height, a little bit more kind of tension to the ski. So yeah, a little more traditionally like track Nordic style. So if you're looking for something that's going to relative for fish scales glide better, have a bit less drag, but a trade off of being maybe a bit less grip on them, especially firm conditions or steeper hills. That's a great choice, whereas other options like Modchus or like Rossignol are a little bit softer in that kind of closing pressure. So you get like more pressure down on the scales, a little more drag, but a little easier climbing ability, things like that.
Yeah, and another aspect to the camber is just allowing that ski to flex into a round shape that's going to promote a turn. So if you have a Nordic ski that has a very stiff portion underfoot, it's going to glide well when you're touring, but that ski is not going to want to flex into a shape that's conducive to making a nice turn through the powder. So now we have this spectrum of Nordic to downhill, and there's skis that are sitting in the middle that will tour effectively but still be real fun to go make turns on.
Yeah, because I know they make really fat, wide fatties with fish scales on. I know they're popular in Colorado. I don't see them much up here as much.
The Front Range of Anchorage is a great example of terrain that's really excellent for those kind of skis when we have snow.
Right, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty fun just to go out and find smaller hills to make turns on.
Yeah, because they don't have to mess with skins or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are listening to Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Twardock, and this is Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about what's new with winter clear and clothing with my guest Rick Roth from AMH and Tony Lombardo with Summit Ski Company. How about, Tony, how about bindings for like backcountry, and then we'll get maybe into more of the cross-country stuff with Rick. So what about bindings and stuff like that? What's going on with those?
Yeah, I would say the most evolution that we've had in the backcountry bindings is just things getting lighter weight yet retaining their durability.
Yeah.
So there's a few companies out there that are making more of a minimalist kind of binding. There's folks skiing extremely aggressively on these bindings. They're using them occasionally at the ski area even, but it's pretty exciting to see just how efficient they are for touring, and also to have confidence in your equipment that you're not going to break something because it's a more minimal piece of equipment.
Yeah. And what about Alpine? We talked about Alpine, but I'll look at you, Tony. Anything with Alpine bindings and skis going on?
Alpine bindings have kind of like towed the line for quite some time.
Yeah.
And we're talking gradual evolution. Things slowly and incrementally get better year by year. But honestly, the bindings are pretty dialed in and they serve their purpose.
Yeah.
The best thing about a binding is to be able to forget about it.
Right. They said about sometime I need an engineering degree. I have a switch binding, I think, and I need an engineering degree, or at least a cheat sheet to remind me how to use it. You know.
Yeah, and that is a good point. There are bindings now that are hybrid style that function on the downhill aspect as a true downhill binding with all of the features and capabilities, but then have a conversion that will allow them to tour, so folks can use one binding for the backcountry and for the resort.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
It is pretty nice. It's a nice binding. Rick, let's go to sort of Nordic in-town stuff. I know I teach skiing for Muni, and people walk down the Kincaid with their brand new borrowed or rental skis, or their skis they just picked up at your shop or at REI or wherever. And so let's talk about that progression a little bit and what kind of different skis I might see at Kincaid, let's say.
Yeah, I would say as far as bindings go for Nordic stuff, the biggest thing is that 4 or 5 years ago now, Salomon stopped producing their proprietary binding system, the SNS or Salomon Nordic system, and moved into a NNN or New Nordic Norm compatible system. So the biggest thing is, as long as you're looking at the in-town kind of track stuff, whatever brand of boots you buy, whatever ski you get, it's all going to be on the same compatibility platform. So that means you can get boots that fit you well, skis that match up with your skiing style and parameters and everything, and everything's going to match up and play nice nowadays, which is huge.
Oh, that's awesome.
You end up with some slightly different ergonomics to some of the bindings. Some of them lift up and down at the toe to open and close. Some of them are a twist. But all the boots work with all of the bindings, which is pretty huge and nice. There is a new like performance racer option that Rotofell is bringing out that's like almost kind of like a mountain bike cleat system for skiing specifically, called the Skate X system. There's only two boots on the market, kind of high-end performance skate ski boots that use it, but it moves the attachment point to the ball of the foot and results in, at the World Cup level, like a relatively noticeable performance increase. So that's pretty interesting to see where that's going to go in the future. But it's like a pretty specialty thing, something I don't think your kind of average skier is going to gain like much benefit from per se.
So let's say I've tried skiing a few times, but I sort of want to get into a little bit more. Maybe I've done some diagonal or otherwise known as classic skiing, and I'm moving, want to go to skate. Mm-hmm. What's your going to be recommend? Someone walks into your shop. What's your recommendation to someone? What should I be looking for?
Yeah, I guess I would say that's especially at our shop, we carry everything from like first time beginners, like just getting on skis, up to like high end Olympic level, like skis, boots, all that sort of stuff. And so a bit of it's like frequency you're looking to go or have been going. Generally, like the more often you go, you'll kind of start to see a little bit better like benefit out of stepping up in performance level and price point of ski respectively. Functionally, by spending more in skis in skate or classic, but in particular skate, you get a lighter weight ski. You get a ski that also is faster because it has a better, more refined camber profile. As you step up in performance levels, you start to see kind of more engineered materials, fiberglass, carbon fiber, things that are really good at storing and retaining energy and giving it back to you, a nice snappy profile. The other thing too is like a lot of folk, if you're just transitioning into skating, or even if you've skated for a while but aren't looking for ultimate performance, Fisher and Atomic are making skate skis that have a little more shape, a little more side cut to them, and for a given like camber profile, or a little bit shorter in length. And they're billing them, and they actually are, there we have a few in our rental fleet that are fun to take out. It's like a fun, more playful kind of stable platform for folk if you're not looking for that kind of ride the rails straight option. Especially like I live really close to the multi-use trails. They're great for stuff like that are a little narrower, maybe aren't quite as beautifully groomed. But it makes like going up hills easy, downhills a little more controllable, and just a little easier to kind of steer around. So those are like a really fun option for folk either just transitioning into skating or people looking for something that's a little different.
And I assume I'm spending more money for the higher end stuff.
For the higher end stuff, yes. But that options I was just talking about, the Aero Guide from Fisher and the Gen S series from Atomic, are both kind of in that more entry level price point stuff, which is nice.
Yeah. What about diagonal skis? And I'm thinking particularly that they have, some of them are coming with mohair on the bottom now. Mm-hmm. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, so the skin skis are skin is kind of the broad stroke term for that. Every major brand has them now. I guess it was originally a thing that Atomic came out with in the 80s, but the camber profile of the skis wasn't quite there to make them work particularly well. The new versions, especially now, are quite good. They kick like a horse. They kick great in a whole range of conditions, so you don't have to worry about temperature of the kick wax or whether it's like cluster or hard wax or things like that. They have a little bit less glide than a waxable classic ski does. Not necessarily the best option for racers, but if you're looking out to just enjoy classic skiing, or somebody who's training for a classic and looking to do like volume workouts or things like that, skin skis are fantastic. It's just like a, to clarify on that, like a short plush mohair inset in the ski that replaces the kick wax zone under the ball of the foot.
I got a pair probably about 8 years, 6 or 8 years ago, and it was very specific temperature range. So is that, I assume that's broadened.
Has, and it, the very specific range ones might be like a zero ski, like that was around a little bit for like right around zero Celsius, fresh falling snow, super difficult. These are totally broad range. They'll run from like, you know, negative temperatures up to like warm, slushy, like melty in the spring. The insert is very much more of like what you would see on like a backcountry climbing skin, quite a bit like relative to the zero skis, more proud from the base, and longer fiber too. So they grip very, very well in just about everything.
Right. What about, this maybe for both of you, I've seen these skis that have, they're like touring, like the ones you were talking about, the Fishers that are sort of not backcountry. They have fish scales on the bottom. What about kicker skins? Like do they come with those, or like how does that work? Because I've seen them where they're like just like a half a skin. Talk to me about that, one of you.
There are skis now that have an attachment right in front of the fish scale zone, which is generally sort of in the middle third of the ski.
Yeah,
and it will have an actual clip, so you can overlay a skin over the fish scale pattern, which allows you a little more climbing potential. Easily removed for any sort of glide or downhill activity.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, that's like replaced the old school like strap on like kicker skin style of skin. It's like an integrated, I know Fisher and Rossignol have them, of like a little hole that goes up through the ski that you pass the skin tip through, so you get a lot less drag and things like that, which is really nice.
Much more effective than the old kicker skins, where oftentimes they would just do a snow plow underneath your ski.
Yeah, it's pretty much what I have right now. I've got some old Pomonas that are really old. I'm building up my Christmas wish list already. We're talking about buying anything about poles, ski poles. Like, let's start with Nordic, since we're talking about that. Any upgrades? I mean, some of it's getting lighter and...
Lighter, stiffer, more expensive.
How about grips? That seems to change a lot.
Yeah, I would say like the biggest change we've seen across kind of many of the brands is more offerings in the quick detach choice, which is nice. So the Nordic specific grips run kind of over the palm of your hand. There's like Velcro that holds you in place nice and securely. So when you're putting power into the poles, it goes into the pole instead of you having to grip on and hold the pole, or like have a loop style strap that's a little loose. And the downside to that is you're attached into your poles. If you want to mess with your boots, step in and out of your skis, take a drink of water, you got to undo the Velcro, take it all off, put it on. And every brand now has an option of a quick detach, so you push a button, flip up on a little lever, the strap itself detaches from the grip on the pole, then you can do what you need and click right back in nice and easy. So that's very convenient, everybody from like just skiing for fun to like racing, training, all that kind of stuff.
Anything else about poles?
That's a big thing, and it's become real big in the alpine world. Leaky makes a trigger release. It's basically you press a button on top of the pole, and the entire grip strap will detach. And now they make gloves that have an attachment, so you don't even need a strap. You just lock your glove right to the pole. Nice to be able to have that connection point, but then also have the possibility, if the pole gets hung up on something, that you'll actually release from the pole, preventing, you know, possible injury.
Yeah. We'll talk about avalanche stuff in the second half. What about helmets? I'm going through my list of stuff. What do I need? Helmets? Anything new with helmets, Tony?
I think helmets are another one of those things that is just kind of an ongoing evolution there. Materials, you know, get lighter. We've got a little bit more safety features. There's features that allow the outer part of the helmet to sort of rotate or have a little bit of sheer ability with the part that's actually fixed to your head, and materials that are more effective at absorbing that compressive impact force.
In the backcountry set of stuff, we're seeing the like alpine helmet technology, the like better compressive materials, and the rotational, like the MIPS system is kind of the big branding for that coming to the backcountry stuff. And then we're also starting to see a lot of multi-certified backcountry helmets.
I was just going to ask that question.
That are like one helmet that has like a climbing, skiing, and a lot of times they'll get the biking certification thrown in there too.
Boating too?
Nobody does a boating one yet, but we're waiting for that. That would be really nice, especially for pack rafting up here. But it's nice that a lot of people used to compromise a lot on backcountry ski helmet because they'd be heavy, or you'd be in more like kind of technical alpine terrain that would be more like rockfall hazard that your ski helmet wasn't necessarily perfect for. So the multi-certified helmets are like nice to have an option that covers everything that you can do in like backcountry alpine terrain skiing up here.
Excellent. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this short break with more about winter equipment.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. We're talking about winter equipment and clothing with Rick Roth with Alaska Mountaineering Hiking and Tony Lombardo with the Summit Ski Company. Let's see, Rick, we're talking about skis. Let's wrap that part up with maybe touring, more like touring boots and bindings.
Yeah, I would say I think we touched a bit on bindings, which have, especially touring bindings, have come a really long way, which is great to see. And in getting like lighter, more robust, durable. And we're starting to see a big kind of change in boots too. And kind of the last 2 years, there's kind of been a new category of boot coming to the market that's kind of bringing the best features of like the ultralight kind of touring oriented well walking boots and the kind of heavier duty downhill free ride boots and kind of taking technologies from each of those and melding them. I'm sure there's going to be a better buzzword at some point, but Blister's kind of calling it the like impossible beef category. Functionally, they're taking like the walk mechanisms and like architecture of the lightweight touring boots, as well as the fancy high-tech plastics from those, and building them around like the plastic thickness and like last layouts of the free ride boots to get these boots that walk pretty much just as well as the super light touring boots and ski pretty much just as well as the like free ride oriented boots at like a fraction of the weight of those. And so personally, I got a set of them last year in like the Ridge Pro boot from Dinafit is like a prime example, as well as the Backland XTD from Atomic. La Sportiva has a Kilo XTR that came out this year, kind of like boots that are kind of the perfect boot for people backcountry skiing up here, where you don't have to kind of pick between heavy or light, stiff or well walking kind of a deal.
Is this like Skimo? Is this like that kind of boot? Like, well, I don't know what I'm talking about, like racing
uphill. Influenced by Skimo.
Influenced by, but kind of has like the backbone and the pedigree of the downhill like free ride boots. So they're pretty sweet. The only trade off is they're definitely a bit more expensive, but they're like built well, built to last, and they do all the stuff really well, which is nice.
It's always a compromise because a boot that skis well and is fun to ski oftentimes is not the best boot to tour in. And when you factor that you're going to spend most of your time climbing the hill or your energy expenditure is during that tour phase, we're always trying to find a boot that's going to satisfy both of these divergent realms. But we are getting closer to having a boot that tours excellently. And then when it is transitioned into a downhill mode, you're going to have a great time and not have any limitations of your skiing due to the boot.
Mm-hmm. Is it going to be like artificial intelligence in boots where it'll know when I'm going downhill?
Well, I'll be Bluetooth and
yeah.
It'll just, a little switch will go off and the whole thing will stiffen up and
the laces, exactly.
I'm just waiting for it. The laces will get tighter and maybe they'll tie themselves for me. That'd be awesome.
That would be kind of nice.
So, Tony, let's talk about snowboards. Sure. What you got with snowboards and what's new with them and bindings?
Yeah, I'd say the newest thing with snowboards, and it's been around for a few years, is just people experimenting with the camber profile. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the flatness and shape of the board as it sits on the ground. So there are a lot of boards that are the middle of the board will be in contact with the snow earlier versus the ends of the board. Allows that board to slide sideways. It gives you more maneuverability, thinking more playful here. So that's a big part of a lot of the modern snowboard construction. And then we are seeing a lot of the more exotic materials from ski evolution percolate over into snowboards. So we have lighter and stiffer boards, and you get a little bit more performance out of things overall. And a lot of companies have definitely upped their game as far as their level of precision and construction. So for many years, snowboards would oftentimes take a second tier to the quality of some of the ski companies that have been around for a long time. But now we're seeing snowboards that are produced at the same level of quality and precision that, you know, high-end alpine skis are.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there's definitely a market there for it. So
definitely.
It seems like. And they're split boards. So those seem, I watch people, my friends, and that seems to be improving that technology.
Yeah, that technology as well has really benefited from the advance of alpine touring technology. So split boards are extremely effective tool. There's really no compromise in performance as far as being able to tour with the board disassembled. You're going to get to the top of the mountain. You're going to assemble it. You're basically going to have a true snowboard for your descent factor. And now we're seeing a lot of folks using alpine touring plastic boots. Some of the lightweight boots that Rick was talking about are now used for split boarding, and then they're actually using the same toe fixture as an alpine touring ski binding. So now we're getting a extremely efficient touring aspect to the split boarding. It's lightweight, it handles rigorous terrain a little better. And a lot of people actually prefer the downhill because you have the positive connection and support of a plastic boot anchored directly to the ski rather than a soft boot that has a little more compliance.
So is there any, what's the advantage of a soft boot then?
I think if we circle back to sort of some of that Telemark ethos, the soft boot's going to have a different feel, and it's a different way that you're going to interact with the environment, and it provides a different experience for some folks. So I think there's a lot of like loyalist aspect to it where we prefer the certain experience that we've come to expect, and other people can transition and try new things, but there's a very unique and specific feel to how the board rides with a soft boot.
And bindings and the new snowboard bindings, or
I'd say mainly the touring aspect of the split board bindings, and then being, you know, more positive connection to the board, more durable construction. So we have lighter weight binding with more precision for the touring aspect and for the downhill aspect.
Well, strictly time for, let's move on to avalanche here. I need a new transceiver. What should I be looking for?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the things that are going on with beacons nowadays are, you know, we're seeing increased range. We're seeing a lot of beacons that have marking features for multiple burial situations, efficiently being able to transition between a search mode and a send mode, and being able to filter out other signals when we're in a more complex response situation. Another thing that I've seen is Bluetooth capability, so we can actually monitor the functionality of the beacon. We can update the beacon, and we can make adjustments to that beacon function just through Bluetooth connection.
Wow.
And I'd say a big thing that has been happening too is as the like electronics get more powerful in the beacons, and kind of that differentiation from brand to brand has kind of leveled out. There's been a really big focus on like user interface, in particular, like display of information on the screen. Many brands, like Mammut in particular, has been doing a very good job of keeping accurate, like digestible information on the screen and not like overloading somebody who's already going to be in like a very stressful situation. Yeah. And that goes a long way towards something that's both like very performant and also very accessible to people too. And that's been a really nice change. Like even in some of the like more featured beacons, when you flip them on and start playing them with them in the store, it's pretty easy for somebody who's new to the whole thing to get a good gist of what it's going on and what's looking, what they're looking at.
Yeah. The user interface definitely has made the recovery process more efficient. The functionality of the beacon too actually will be more accurate in as it's directing you. You know, we used to follow an arc as the beacon was receiving its radio signal. There's beacons now that have updated orientation at their antenna. So when you see the beacon point you in a direction, it's a true direction. Distance to the person is much more accurate. So we're all just shaving time off of this recovery process.
Yeah, they've become computers. Mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive. Anything else about Avalanche Clear? How about BADS, airbags, Rick? Any thoughts about those?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing in airbag packs is the transition to the electronic or the fan-based packs from the like compressed air cylinder bags.
Yeah.
And they have like plenty of benefits. A big one is like it's easy to travel with them. But I think kind of the biggest ones are you can test pull it at any time. There's been some studies done that show that people are hesitant to pull their bags because they're not sure if now is the moment. And with a rechargeable bag, you can pull it when you want. If you're in a multi-day trip or still in the backcountry, they can charge themselves off of either an internal like lithium ion battery or a AA battery system, and in 45 minutes or so you're back full charge, ready to go, which is great. And then if you pull it, you can charge it at home, you can make sure it's always topped off. All brands recommend like a beginning of the season function check to make sure it runs. So instead of doing that and going to the dive shop and paying $20 or so to get it filled, you can just like walk out your front door in your living room and give it a yank, which is nice. They're getting a lot lighter, a little more weight competitive, but as with everything, nice and new and shiny, they are a bit more expensive than the canister bags.
And the compressed air I think still has some advantages in that weight category.
Mm-hmm.
There's Arva makes a 4-pound avalanche airbag. Yeah. It uses a carbon canister. So there are pros and cons to both. I think some of the pros also with the compressed air system is its inflation speed and the force at which it inflates. It's nearly instantaneous and it's going to retain much greater buoyancy and sort of impact resistance because that inflation pressure is greater. And one thing that we do, you know, it is a little bit more prohibitive, the testing of the bags, which we absolutely encourage. And one thing that we do at the shop is I have a whole arsenal of filled canisters and we loan them to people for testing, you know, no charge to test their bags out. They're welcome to bring their bags down and test them out. Or I've loaned canisters out because we definitely want to create an environment where somebody's familiar with the gear and how it's going to react.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about radios? Are they people carry radios? I see them. I don't use them, but like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've noticed a bit more in the backcountry. Is there's been like some advances in like small, compact, rechargeable, like weatherproof radios that it's become more prevalent in more ski groups now.
Yeah.
And like having top to bottom communication is huge among groups and partners and things like that. And I definitely like encourage more people to have that ability because if something happens or, you know, you need to convey some information about snow conditions or stuff like that, it's way better than trying to scream and yell and hope that they heard you.
That'd be me.
Yeah. And there's quite a few brands. I know like Rocky Talkies is a big one. BCA also has options as well. Even if it's something just like a decent Motorola or something like that work well. Pretty much all of them will talk on the same FRS radio frequencies, like pick your numbers, your sub channel, and they should all talk with each other, which is great.
I think, you know, people are pushing more technical terrain as the technology of the gear progresses and the avalanche information progresses, people push into more technical terrain. And I think we've all been in a circumstance where one of our ski party descends out of sight and there's a moment of, well, what the heck are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, and we're playing a guessing game. It's nice to have that communication.
Yeah.
Adds additional, you know, safety net.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. I have Rick Roth with Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking and Tony Lombardo with Summit Ski Company. We've got about 10 or 15 minutes left, guys. Let's talk about, like, get away from skiing, tell my bias, skiing. How about other sports, snowshoeing? Anything new? I'm going to look at Rick. I don't know if you guys sell snowshoes at all. Look at Rick, because I know you guys do,
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing huge or crazy in snowshoes. Every so often, there's, like, changing materials or things like that. We at AMH carry a slightly more technical side of snowshoes. We don't necessarily have any of the, like, kind of extruded aluminum tube frame options.
No Sherpas?
No, nothing quite like that. But we carry options from MSR that have, like, either plastic composite or, like, a mix of plastic composite and metal, or, like, full metal, like, vertical frame, like, crampons, getting ahead of myself here. snowshoes that are very crampon ass, that if you're kind of going up steeper terrain, kind of firmer, icier, things like that, you get really good bite and support and stability out of those. And every so often, MSR has kind of updated their, like, boot attachment system to be easier to use, a little more even and cohesive of the pressure across the foot, things like that, which is nice to do.
Nice. So, let's go to clothes and outerwear. I don't know. Any thoughts? What's new? What's anything exciting out there?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for clothing is the moving away from the PFAS chemicals, forever chemicals, which is a nice thing to see. A lot of that stuff is being either already banned or being phased out in an industrial level. And then in New York State and California, no brands are allowed to sell any PFAS-containing items to the consumer market, which has really driven a lot of change, like fast change in the backcountry realm, which is nice to see. And so there's new stuff in that space. Kind of a big one is the EPTFE, lots of big chemical string names. But that's like the replacement for Gore-Tex.
I was going to ask about Gore-Tex.
Which is what's being rolled out a little bit last year. You'll see it in pretty much all of the stuff from every brand this year, which is nice. And it is good to see that fast change away, because that stuff's very much not good for the environment and for humans.
Going away.
Gore-Tex as a brand is still around, but they're introducing a new, like, PFAS-free membrane through their whole line of gloves, jackets, boots, all the stuff. Which is why you'll see lots of, like, your old favorites kind of going away and being reintroduced as new or updated or things like that.
Anything else about clothing that we should know about?
The electronic battery-powered clothing's becoming a little more common, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And any thoughts on that? I know. Well, here's a question for you. Does that stuff interfere with avalanche transceivers?
In general, like, the safety rule is kind of 30 centimeters from any sort of electronic device, radios, GoPros, phones, anything like that.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing for backcountry users would be heated gloves or heated body wear.
Any
thoughts about that, Tony?
Yeah, no, that's exactly correct. And it's definitely something that somebody needs to be aware of.
Yeah.
I think anecdotally, I've definitely heard folks having interference in their beacon reception. With gloves, and I don't know if there's any hard science or data there, but it's something to be aware of.
Okay, great. What about prepping for winter? Let's talk about what I want to go to waxing. My skis are in storage. I'm going to probably pull them out this afternoon. What should I do? Guys, help me out here. I'll talk to Tony.
Well, if you've been good to your skis, and
I haven't.
Ideally, we'd leave a coat of storage wax on the base of the ski, so the plastic of the base will degrade over time from oxidation and UV radiation. Having the wax there as a protective coating, if you can imagine wax as a moisturizer for the base of the ski, it's going to help keep that plastic in good shape, helps preserve the life of the plastic. So ideally, we have a coat of storage wax on our skis over the summertime. Oftentimes that doesn't happen. So probably the first step is a good coat of wax.
Yeah.
Nice saturation. You can't wax too much.
So, and that like a warm wax of some sort?
Yeah, yeah. Warm wax is going to penetrate more into the base, so it's a nice starting layer.
Yep.
And then you can subsequently tune that temperature of the wax to match the temperature of the snow.
All right.
Yeah, and if you're like me and just leave your skis in the shed all summer long, I usually try to give them like a wipe down or like a little brush out to get all the the grit and the grime off before I put a coat of wax on there at first.
Uh-huh. And what about tuning and I think that stone grinding and any other prep that you know your shops offer or you can do at home? One can do at home.
Yeah, we encourage stone grinding periodically to keep the base of the ski flat. The ski naturally over time is going to warp a little bit, or just the action of skiing frequently on it will cause some wear. The ski performs best when the base is perfectly flat. It's going to be more predictable. So we encourage folks to get their skis stone ground at least once a season, if not more, if they're skiing a lot. We work with a lot of racers. They're stone grinding their skis constantly. So it's something to be aware of and keep in mind.
Yeah, and on the cross-country side of things, that holds similar to, you know, a bit, especially with last winter being a little scratchy. It's not uncommon to accumulate some nicks, dings, kind of things like that in the bottom of your cross-country skis. And stone grinding, which is removing small amounts of material to resurface and restructure the base of the skis, can take care of that or smooth out any sharp edges, things like that. The other thing with cross-country skis is that because it's a like human-powered activity, it's at a little bit less gravity-powered like downhill. Kind of moisture management of free liquid under the ski plays a big part. And so in the base of every ski is like a structure that's put in there that deals with moisture under the ski, either keeping it under or moving it out in a way, depending on the conditions you're looking for or in. And it also increases the surface area of the ski, so kind of more area for wax to be bonded to. And so grinding the ski, refreshing the structure will help a lot with that as well. If you kind of look at the bases of your skis and they're like really shiny and flat looking, you don't see kind of like a bunch of small little texture to them. That's a good sign. It's a time to get it all taken care of, which right at the beginning of the season is a good time to do that. So you're ready for when the snow does show up.
Right. Sounds like my skis. For, look at you, Tony, for sort of backcountry skis, waxing, how about tuning my edges? What do I do with that?
Well, you know, backcountry skis, edges are not the most crucial, I would say, often. Unless you're in situations where it's firm conditions, and, or if you're in a situation where you really don't want to fall, let's say the consequences of a fall would be detrimental.
Yeah, yeah.
ideally, backcountry skiing, we're skiing powder. That's the goal.
Ideally, that's what I like.
Right? And so the edges versus skiing at a resort where you've got icy surfaces, crusty surfaces, the edges become a little less important. I would definitely say it's good to keep oxidation and rust from building up on the edges. And again, periodically sharpening them will give you a noticeable performance increase. Let's say you're skiing on the front range of Anchorage. We've got a lot of wind-blown, firmer surfaces. Edges can definitely be nice in that backcountry environment.
Yeah.
And there's lots of options to either like do tuning work at home, ranging from like you can kind of buy the full like hand tool setup that you might see at like a shop to like small touch-up stuff, or both Tony and AMH offer like full tuning services as well if you want to go more in depth, or that's just something you're not interested in doing. But yeah, there's lots of options for doing stuff at home too, which is great.
And I think about this, how often I'm pretty I don't know, frugal, cheap, my wife might tell, say. But like, how often should I do that? Have one, should I, every year should I bring my skis into you guys, or every other year? Like, how, any advice on that, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say at a minimum, a yearly, you know, we're kind of like a yearly tune-up.
Yeah.
That's always a good way to go. And honestly, paying attention to the performance of the ski. If you find that ski starting to slip and slide, well, now it's time to get that edge.
Aren't skis supposed to slip and slide, though?
Not sideways.
Not sideways. Gotcha. Okay, just want to clarify that. Yeah.
But yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt to just run your hand along the edge.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling that edge, no catching of the edge when you're brushing your hand along it, then probably an indicator that edge is a little dull.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. How about my Nordic skis? When should I bring them in to be stone line?
Yeah. I'd say it's, yeah, if, like, for the kind of average, like, recreational non-racer, yeah. I would say it's like maybe once a season for stone grinding, depending on what it looks like. If you're pretty religious and you're like at home hot waxing, that kind of extends a time frame for that too. If you're a person who like just uses the swipe on, like the easy wax, or like the liquid, like apply and brush off wax, getting your skis hot waxed at least a couple times a season is a good idea. Yeah, if you notice like a big performance degradation of your skis, that's a kind of a sign to bring it in. We're always more than happy to look at your skis, see what's going on, and kind of give you some recommendations of the best way to move forward. A lot of racers will like refresh the structure and grind their skis every year. Or if they're like acquiring new skis, kind of building out a fleet, we can fine tune skis to very specific snow conditions and things like that too.
We're about to wrap up here. Any other advice on prepping for winter? On my clothing, my gear? What do you guys do? What are you thinking about right now?
Yeah. I mean, don't be like me and just panic the first day and pull everything out and realize you're like, pants have holes in them and your skin glue is too sticky and full of dog hair and your skis still have wax on them. Like, now's a great time to just like get a bunch of friends together and have like a waxing party, or like check and make sure your beacon works, like put fresh batteries and all that kind of stuff. Take a look at your clothing layers, make sure any repairs you need to do or anything like that are done. Like, yeah, just getting down in a bit of the early hustle and bustle of when you're really stoked to go out and go skiing. It's always nice.
Don't wait till Saturday morning on the first snowfall. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to make sure your first day is a shakedown day. We don't want to go big the first day, because you're inevitably going to find all of the things that you forgot about from the previous season, about your bindings not working, or like Rick said, this piece of clothing, zipper's not working. Let's do a prelim day, and hopefully we can manage some of that stuff.
Unlike getting up to Hatcher or Turnagain and all of a sudden you forgot a skin or something's not working.
Exactly.
There's a buckle broken on your boot, or you go all the way out to Kincaid and they're like, wait a minute, these boots don't match the ski.
I always say as a shop technician, we often, you know, we're working on other folks' gear all day long, all week long. Often our gear is the most neglected.
Oh, no. Oh, yes.
So that's something to keep in mind. Yeah. You let things go a little bit too long sometimes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are you guys looking forward to this winter, besides snow and winter?
Snow, yeah.
Any big trips planned or any adventures?
I'm hoping we have more snow locally here in Anchorage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we had good skiing last year. The snow's up there. You can get to it, but it's really nice when Anchorage has a healthy amount of snow for the Nordic activities, just for going around town, and also to be able to travel around the Anchorage Front Range. We came off of, I think, three really good winters that were absolutely amazing, and it kind of resets your expectations. You get used to having those kind of options, and then when the climate changes, it's a little tougher to digest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, a nice fresh coat of, or continual fresh coats of snow around town in the Front Range would be great. And I would really love if it was snowy and stormy every day I have to work in, blue and sunny when I have my days off.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a hard one to schedule.
That's a retail guy's dream. Well, thank you both for being on the show today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks,
Paul.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Thanks to my guest Rick Roth with Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking, and Tony Lombardo with Summit Ski Company. Also, thanks to our producer Tobin Shelby, with additional help from Amon Swenson. I'm your host, Paul Torduck, and from all the hosts of Outdoor Explorer, wax your skis, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.